and welcome to Talk Around Town, the program that looks at issues in context. I'm Deborah Schnabel, today's program host. Tom Morfitt, the editor of the Chilkat Valley News, is with us today to give us perspective on current events. Emily Files is checking in with the Haines Arts Council president, Tom Haywood, and our talking topic is Policing Haines, with guests Jim Stanford and Judy Erickson of the Public Safety Commission and Borough Manager David Sosa. Stay tuned. And a good morning to you, Tom. Welcome.
Good morning, Deborah.
Nice to see you so calmed out after you run up the flight of stairs.
Me worrying?
Yeah.
Alfred Newman. Right.
Tom, it seems like a year of events has happened in the last week. We came off the Free Ride World Tour and we signed off on a parking lot and we lost two key public employees. It's a week that you really didn't want to leave Haines, wouldn't you say?
Well...
When it rains,
it pours. Right. yeah, isn't that something? The perspective, I guess, is that always predict the unpredictable, always expect the unexpected, and welcome to Haines.
When we were talked last, we were still waiting on the weather for the Free Ride World Tour, so that took off. And I just wanted to comment a little bit or get your perspective. Have you been talking around town with people and how the event impacted the economy and impacted business? I think that's an interesting perspective because it's one of those things that we might be able to bring back or they might want to come back. But I think that there might be money involved in the future to lure them back here.
Right.
Do you have any perspective on how the business community responded?
Well, the folks that I talked to, the restaurant sector did really well by the show. And I think we were a little impressed that what a sober group they were. I mean,
well,
on a certain level.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the bar's not so well.
They're just the nature of the difficulty of what they do. Mm-hmm. They were kind of quiet and diligent group, and you could almost feel it when they left. There was another group coming into town, and they were kind of more boisterous.
Well, they're recreationists.
Yeah,
yeah, the recreational skiers are in town now.
I think we expected them to be maybe more glamorous, and you met them. They kind of like seemed like the neighbor kid, you know.
And they were. In fact, it wasn't there a local kid. Well, not real local, but a guy that grew up here.
Yeah, Garrett Altman.
Yeah,
it was here. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the more colorful ones and of the pros. And he was very soft-spoken and real polite. I wonder if the Olympic athletes are that way. You know,
modest people. Of course they are. Okay, yeah. So I think that basically, I think it was pretty successful. One of the things that I found out later on was a lot of people many people who have small shops were maybe not impacted directly by participants in the Free Ride World Tour, but they benefited from those who. Had an increase in business who then spent their money around town. Mm-hmm. For example, somebody who was, you know, needed a haircut, but didn't have the money to, you know, go have it done, went and had it done because they had more money in their pocket. That kind of stuff. There's a little more money flowing around town.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Not in great big ways.
Yeah.
But
well, I remember the, I hate to always be Mr. Old dragging history back. Mm-hmm. We had Red Bull Snow Thrill Alaska. Mm-hmm. What year was that? 2000.
Oh, it was in the 80s.
Six? No. That was they made
90s.
A book about it.
Oh.
You know that the Snow Thrill Alaska that was here, and it was a competitive event, very similar to this. I think we can expect that these events will always find their way here. Mm-hmm. But I think some of the novelty of Alaska is it's a one-off. And
It's worn off?
It's a one-off. It happens one time.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And, you know, they, the It sounds like they.
Well, I don't know, Tom. People have been skiing the Alps for centuries.
Right. Well, I guess I'm particularly mindful of the $1 million in sponsorships they get at other locations, and there's just no way we can ever meet that. And they have expense. I heard it was $30,000 a pop when they just to set up out there, set up all their gear and the tent and everything. So that happened three times. So that was 100K just, you know, kind of in the moving things from here to there. I think Alaska will always have that. Once in a lifetime appeal, but if you do it twice in a lifetime, is the appeal still there?
I don't know. Okay, let's move along to something else. Something else has happened in the community over the last week or so. Yeah, what has it been?
Well, I guess turnover at City Hall is the big one. Two executive level jobs there turning over just like that.
Both on the same day, apparently. But I don't know. We'll find out more about that later.
And our budget, you know, the main spending document was issued yesterday. Some changes there.
And that's available to the public on the borough website if you want to go on there and take a look at it. And I think that the Choctaw Valley News will have a spread on the budget here for this next week, I think. So it's a little too early for me to start asking and talking a lot of questions about the budget because I haven't reviewed it at all yet.
We came out yesterday and we have a story in this week's paper, but a lot more digging into that for sure. Mr. Sosa, the new manager, has his take on what should be done, and I think the assembly will, you know, hear his recommendations. This time of year, people like to say, "Well, it's fluid; it's a work in progress." you know, we typically hear that. So, you know, be at the hearings. If you have something you want from the government, typically this is the time of year we see those people. Or if you have a program that might need defending because somebody else wants your money, it's going to behoove you to be at the meeting.
I just thought it was interesting. You said that our new borough manager, Mr. Sosa, is celebrating his annual review here this next week. He has been here a year. So this is the manager's first budget. He came into the job with someone else's budget. And now this is the first time that he's been able to gather up everything that he's learned about the community in the last year and put it together in a budget document. So do you know when those are all, when are the public or when the committee meetings being scheduled so that we can attend them?
Well,
is that going to be posted? Do you know?
That schedule is already out and it's in this week's paper.
Oh, okay.
They're going to be on the 14th of April and
Okay, we'll find out. We'll read the paper.
In this week's paper, there's going to be at least three workshops and two public hearings.
Cool.
So, the workshops will be ambitious. I think there's just an hour set aside for each third of the budget. So $4 million we'll review roughly in an hour. So
Just to recap then, change at City Hall, big news of the week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the I know that you had a discussion too. It was also the 1 week review of the harbor design, and that apparently came and went in the time that in the amount of 1 week.
We're still trying to put together exactly that process. People gave comment. There was no immediate response to the comments. Like sometimes with agencies, state agencies, you comment on their thing and they comment back and say, "This is why we're doing what we're doing." We haven't had that.
They go back to the work table and come back with another review.
Or they go back,
BLM's famous for that.
Right. And we have. We know what that process is when it's an ordinance, and we don't really have that nailed down for a project. When can we stop commenting? It seems like that process we're reinventing on each big project, and that's a shame.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming by, Tom.
Yes, and, thanks for having me.
Don't forget to put some socks on.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The Haines Arts Council had a busy winter. There were concerts, two film screenings, and hosting not one but two Northern Lights showcases, the stage for local performers. In this pre-recorded interview, KHNS's Emily Files talks with Arts Council President Tom Haywood about even more dazzling upcoming events for our amusement.
We actually have a really busy spring coming up. On April 7th, we have a brass quintet from Mexico coming up. They're called Metales M5, and they've been billed as Mexico's top brass group, and they are really fantastic. They perform many different kinds of ways. They do classical, but they also do, you know, modern and pop, and it can range from a very serious piece to a very theatrical and almost acrobatic kind of thing. I've seen groups of brass, you know, climbing on each other's shoulders and, you know, doing somersaults and doing all kinds of funny things. I'm not sure exactly what this group has in store for us, but brass can be a lot of fun, and it will fill the hall with sound, you know, so it's great. And we really would love to see a huge audience out for this one.
So where will that be?
It'll be at the Chilcat Center in the main hall, and it'll be utilizing our new sound system as well. So these guys are really excited to come to Alaska, you can imagine.
They haven't been to Alaska before?
No, but they've been all over the globe, you know. They've performed across the United States and Mexico and Europe and many other places. So
one thing I was wondering, with the musical acts that the council brings to town, how does that process usually work with finding who you guys want to bring here and then getting in touch with them? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a lot less random than you might think. There are many different connections that I've established over the years. One primary one being with the Anchorage Concert Association. Jason Hodges up there. We do several teleconferences throughout the course of the year with many different arts presenters across the state. Lots of arts councils from Southeast Alaska on up to the North Slope. And we talk to each other about what we like and what's available. And
is that so you can kind of coordinate so the group can go to multiple Alaska stops and you'll save some money?
Exactly. There's no way the Haines Arts Council can sponsor a touring group with us being just the only venue.
Okay.
It has to be part of a tour.
Okay.
But I also attend conferences now and then down in the Pacific Northwest that showcase artists that are touring and hoping to get booked. And everybody has interest in coming to Alaska. So I don't have trouble finding interested parties, but when the realities of travel and expense come down to it, that does weed out an awful lot of potential performers.
Yeah.
So we have to have more than just ticket sales to cover our events. And if you've ever been in an audience during a great show and you looked around and go, wow, how can this be paying for the event? It doesn't. What really pays for it is the membership. I mean, the tickets is a great start on each show, but if we did not have a strong membership of the Haines Arts Council through our yearly annual membership drive, we wouldn't be able to put on these events.
So there are a lot of talented musicians in town, so what's kind of your pitch when you're asking people to become members? Why is it important to have the money to bring groups from out of Haines here?
Well, I think it's always important to keep exposure to new things and new opportunities. Most of us, including the musicians, want to see other groups and hear other groups.
Are there any bands or artists that have established a really strong connection with Haines and have come back multiple times?
There are a few bands and individuals that have been here numerous times. I'm thinking back right now. This year we did present a great pianist by the name of Roman Rudnitsky. He has been here four times now, and he's a really, really dynamic player. But that's really unusual. There are so many different performers out there, and I think our town is hungry for new mm-hmm. experiences.
Yeah, so you mentioned the one band that's coming here on April 7th, and mm-hmm. so what other events are coming up?
Right, on April 18th, we have Theater in the Rough coming up from Juno. This will be the third year in a row that they will have come to Haines to perform. They're in the midst of performing Shakespeare's Henry V down in Juno, and it's getting great press down there, and they love to take it on the road and come up to Haines. So that will be a neat opportunity to get some
and
more culture.
And they're going to be performing Henry V?
Henry V, yeah. And I personally need to go and do some research on that and read about it so I know what's coming. But I'm looking forward to it. It's always a challenge and an interesting and gratifying experience to see a Shakespeare play. And these guys have lots of action. They always bring their swords, and there's sword fights and stage action that is really exciting.
So Theater in the Rough, that's a Juno-based mm-hmm. theater group?
Yes, and they primarily do Shakespeare.
Okay.
Yeah. Then on May 5th, we have a really dynamic Celtic band coming. They're called Scythian. They're a really dynamic band. They've been kind of described as a barn dance rock concert.
Well, I took a stroll down the old long walk of the day, and I met a little girl and we stopped to talk of a fine soft day, and I asked you, friend, what's a fella to do, cause her hair was black and her eyes were blue, and I knew right then I'd be taking a whirl round a song in a prom with a Galway girl.
All multi-instrumentalists, they're all singers, dancers, they've got a drummer. I've seen video of them with audience participation. That's really exciting. I think people will really like this group. We haven't performed or presented Celtic groups in a long time here in Haines, believe it or not. We're going for it with this group.
Any other events you want to mention?
Well, the Arts Council typically kind of goes into hibernation in the summertime because there's so much going on in Haines in the summer. Mm. But lately we have taken on a few events, and this summer we have a couple things planned. And one of them is a young man by the name of Len Miller, who's from Sweden. He has spent the last two summers here in Haines, and I've gotten to know him quite well. And he's a songwriter and a singer, guitarist and a fiddler. And he writes some of the most interesting songs. They're almost all historical songs. And he's really kind of focused on the North and the Gold Rush era. And his songs and his voice are really capturing that period. And I thought it'd be really fun for him to do a concert in the lobby this summer. And he was happy to do it. So,
do you have a date scheduled for that?
Not a specific date yet. We're going to kind of look around. When he gets here, we'll look at the calendar and see when there's availability. So I've had a lot of opportunities to play music with him, different places like on the beach and, mm-hmm. and all those great gatherings that happen in Haines in the summer. So he's a talented guy.
Great.
And then for many of you might remember a bass player by the name of Milo Matthews. He originally came to Haines with the Danny Godinez band years ago, and also a band called Love Life Music, and he's been here numerous times, really great musician. He's going to come and do a solo show in August.
Great, so yeah. A couple things planned for the summer too.
Yeah.
And with all the winter events that you guys have put on, do you feel like there was anything new that you did or anything that you learned about what you might want to do in the following winters?
Well, one thing is I've just kind of learned to relax a little bit and know that there are going to be things that become available. I don't have to sweat it too much. We've already got a great thing happening next October. There's a woman by the name of Martha Redbone. She's kind of a jazz singer and pop singer. She'll be here with a band. There's other things in the makings right now. So I know that we'll have a good season next year as well. We're always trying to look for the right formula for performance days of the week, trying to figure out what will bring in the best audience, whether it's a weekday or a weeknight.
Do you feel like you've gotten an answer for that yet?
Nope, haven't figured it out yet. Sunday night tends to be a halfway decent option. But, you know, Friday and Saturdays, there's basketball during the winter, and there's other things, auctions and banquets and things. During the week, it's school nights, so we're never quite sure what the best is. And sometimes we don't have a choice. If it's part of a tour, we have to take whatever night we can get. Mm-hmm. But we're always looking to get the audience up there, you know, get our numbers up. So I guess one plug I'd like to put out there, I've said this before, but in terms of deciding to go to an Arts Council concert or not, I hope that people don't look at it as, well, that's not really my genre, I'm not really interested as much in that type of music.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I can do is I can guarantee you that whatever the genre is, it's going to be really well done. And if you can come and experience something that maybe you didn't know you liked before, I think you'll be enriched by it. And I know the Arts Council will be enriched, because the more we get in our audience, the better we can do for future events. So really try to get out there when you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's looking for help with their organizations, but for us, participation at the events and in our membership, that's what really helps us.
Anything else to add?
I think that's about it. Well, we are actually looking potentially at showing another film later this spring as well, but I'll bring up more of that when it becomes a reality, but things are always in the makes.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, and the new sound system and new lights up in the Chilkat Center.
Mm-hmm.
Totally excited about that.
Yeah.
It's already, I heard a concert last week that sounded great. There's a brand new dance floor, so the next time we do present a dance, we roll out this thing called a Marley floor. We've really upped the ante in terms of what we can do up there, so
great.
Happy about that.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, Tom Haywood from the Haines Arts Council. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
And since that interview was recorded, the date for the Mentalis M5 concert was changed. That concert is now on Monday, the 6th of April, not the 7th. So it's on Monday, April 6th. And Mentalis M5 and Cynthian will also be playing in Skagway. Well, it was 1 year ago that Talk Around Town scheduled Chief Musser and Public Safety Commission Chair Jim Stanford for a discussion called Policing Haines. The chief was called out to court that day, but Jim showed up. And Jim's here again today, along with another commissioner, Judy Erickson, and with the borough manager, David Sosa. But Chief Musser is not here, though he was invited. Chief Musser has resigned his position. So today I want to explore with you why policing Haines is a problem, or maybe it isn't. And we're here to explore the issues surrounding that. Welcome to Jim Stanford, the chair of the commission, and to Judy Erickson, also a commissioner on the Public Safety Commission. Welcome.
Hello.
And welcome to you, David. Thank you for being here. I know it's been a very, very busy week for you.
Just a little bit.
All right.
But thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, I couldn't do it without you. So Chief Musser resigned after 14 months on the job. Prior to Chief Musser, we had a year without an experienced chief. And prior to that, a chief that served for almost 5 years, but upon investigation, they were difficult ones for the staff. After the departure of Chief Lowe, and that was in 2013, the borough reorganized the police chief to report directly to the borough manager. Prior to that, it was reporting to the assembly. So, David, as the direct supervisor, would you please tell us, why are we without a chief today?
Well, we're not without a chief.
Well, you're right. Oh, you got me there. What's the situation?
Well, it's like I sent in my email to the media. Chief expressed that there were some family issues and personal issues that he felt necessitated him stepping down from the position, and I understood that. We talked about it for a while, and you know, he took some time to think it over, and then we chatted last week, and he said he felt it would be in the best interest of himself and his family if he resigned. And, you know, I was not happy with that. I would have preferred that he stayed. But, you know, people have to do what's important for themselves and their families, and I respect that. And we will move forward, and we'll find new solutions.
Okay, and we'll find out how we're going to do that. But yes, would you first tell me, so what are the, how long will the chief be with us in town? Is he here until we find a new chief, or is it an end date?
He will be with us until the 21st of May.
Okay.
So we'll be posting that position shortly, and hopefully we'll receive some good inquiries about it, and we can move forward with a hiring process.
Okay.
There's a potential that we could look at establishing someone in an interim position to extend the hiring process, but we'll take a look at that based on what we see in terms of reception for the posting.
Okay. Now, the community has struggled not just with the hiring of a police chief, but in the hiring of many of our key executive positions over the question of whether or not we should, like, get a headhunting, business or a service to help us. It's an agency that specializes in recruiting applicants, and then they screen them and hand off to the hiring municipality a list of people that they've pretty much vetted. And we did discuss that approach last year when we were looking for a police chief, and I don't think that we did that. And we ended up with 5 candidates that got narrowed down to 2. And just for a perspective, I was told by Tom Morfitt of the Choctaw Valley News that in Petersburg, they were looking for a police chief at about the same time that we were, and they hired an agency and to find them a police chief, and they got 75 applicants. So that's just, I know that's just a numbers game. It doesn't mean that it's a quality game. And I want to ask a member of the commission first before I ask you, David. Because I think a lot of times what the community wants to be supportive of. What is your take on whether or not, you know, what are the benefits? Are you willing to put, I don't know, I think sometimes it's up to like $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 sometimes for an agency to help you find someone. What's your take on hiring a service?
Well, in the first place, applications can be very deceiving. And we've had multiple incidents here in Haines of people getting hired based on what is stated in their applications and come to find out later on that they are not what they said they were or didn't have the capabilities that. I always thought from a school district to the borough, if you get a slew of applications, hiring an outside firm could probably be a good thing. But I also thought if...
You mean to look through the applications?
To look through applications, to vet the applications. Mm-hmm. Another option is to get local people to explore the other communities by phone calls or even possible visits, mm-hmm. to visit people and see how they felt about this person that's applied for the job in Haines, whether they could do the job or not.
Mm-hmm.
We've had incidences in the school district where we've hired people and then wound up they weren't at all like what was stated on their application, and their capabilities were very poor. So, you know, I think there's a lot of ways of going about doing this.
Okay.
And we have budget constraints now. Coming from the straits, the state, and what I hear people saying is, do we really have $30,000 or $40,000 to spend on a consulting firm when we're cutting back Hark's Animal Rescue and some other facilities because we simply don't have the money? So that's a real question. I hear that coming from people a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll finish by saying I'm very disappointed that Chief Musser's leaving. I thought that the police department was getting stability. And, I'm very disappointed he's mm-hmm. leaving. So
well, thank you for that.
I agree with David.
Okay. So, David, what is your – have you ever used a – I'm sorry, I keep using the word headhunting firm. It's not what I mean. I mean, it is what I mean, but what's the more effective word?
Well, you can use headhunting firm, but it's a professional service it's a professional hiring service, basically.
Now, one of the things that my understanding is that they also – The reason that they can be more successful in getting a greater number of applications is because they actually take on the responsibility of advertising and throwing the net out and getting them. Have you formulated your opinion or attitude about whether or not this might be a way we would go with our hiring for a new police chief?
Well, I'm definitely thinking about it. I mm-hmm. think there are advantages to it. Among the advantages, you typically get access to a wider pool. they have a better understanding, particularly if they focus on police and emergency services, of what are the best places to post advertising to get a draw. They normally have been working with a number of these applicants for a while, so they may be familiar with their backgrounds, and they can really thoroughly vet them for you, particularly when you look at how busy things can be in the borough, like at budget time. You want to vet anybody who's coming in, and you'll make phone calls, and you'll talk to references. But can you devote that many hours to it? Can you do a thorough and professional records check that one of these services may be able to do? So those are the benefits of it. The drawbacks are it can be expensive, but so is employee turnover, and so is not having a firm understanding. So every time you have to hire something, right. You have someone, you have to go through a process. Right. So these are all the different things that we have to weigh.
Right. I know, I just feel somewhat beleaguered, I think, with the police department. It does the turnover in the department, not just the chief, but it just seems to be one of those issues that we seem to deal with constantly. And you know, we're not Mayberry RFD, I understand that. And I think that policing in a small town is difficult, and we'll explore some of, mm-hmm. you know, that aspect of it. I just want to get through this process of hiring, because the by code, the Public Safety Commission will make recommendation for hiring to the manager. So in the code, when the position of chief of police is or is about to become vacant and has been properly advertised, review of the applications is required by law by the Public Safety Commission, and then you make that recommendation. So after the recommendation, then the manager will make the decision. Are you comfortable with that, David, with that? The idea of the Public Safety Commission making a recommendation to you?
Well, it says that in code, so we have to do it. But it's something that I've been working with.
But are you comfortable with
it? Yes, I am. It's okay. Also something I've been working on, at least in part, with other positions we've hired. I've asked that members of the Port and Harbor Advisory Committee work with me on the hire of a new harbor master. And I've also like to have assembly members on the panel, as well as department heads on the panel, so I can get a full understanding from different perspectives of what does this application say? So, yes, I'm very comfortable with it, because I think having additional input provides different perspective that helps us make a better decision.
Great. Okay. Sounds like it's a process that we're all going to begin and go through with. I want to talk a little bit now about this ongoing audit. Now, I called it evaluation, I think, for a long time. That's how it was presented, as an evaluation of the police department. And Chief Musser, even, I believe, and you can verify this, David, that there was a... The chief did come to you and say he may be leaving or is thinking about leaving even before the contract for the evaluation was made. Is that correct?
Not before the contract, okay. But we've been talking about it for a little bit. So okay. Before Mr. Russell came out, we had discussed it, and okay. We were looking at that.
So tell me, I guess for many people, including myself, I thought, wow, you know, the chief is leaving, and why then are we going through this audit? Why are we going through this evaluation of a police department that right now seems a little bit, it's anemic in a sense. I mean, it doesn't, there's I don't know
moot.
How many people, pardon?
It's a moot point.
Okay. So let's move, so we want to know, why is the evaluation important, and how effective or beneficial can it be to be evaluating a police department, if that's in fact what we're doing?
I mean, it's a great question, and I think, you know, people have asked that. Why are we doing this? And I'd start with, you know, look at some of the other things we do within the borough. We audit the finance department because there's an incredible amount of liability associated with looking after our finances, and we do that on an annual basis, and it costs us about $50,000 a year. But the liability associated with not doing that is extreme. When you look at a police department, you're looking at an organization that the second they place hands on someone, they arrest them and they strip them of their freedom. And there's an incredible amount of liability associated with that. Now, we accept that because our officers have gone through training. They are appointed by the municipality to do that job. And we understand that the procedures and the policies that are in place are appropriate to their ability to do that. But no different than the finance department, every few years we want to audit the police department. We want to take a look at policies. We want to take a look at procedures. And that's something I looked at from the first day I got here for all departments. What are we doing to get an external look at how we do business? Are we doing business appropriately?
So we're not just kidding ourselves.
That we're not just kidding ourselves, because I'm not an expert in every department. Mm-hmm. No one's an expert in every department, and things change. State laws change. Policies change. So having someone outside look at us and tell us, hey, the emperor's got no clothes, mm-hmm. that's a really helpful thing, because we want to make sure we're doing right by the community. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we're supporting our police department and ensuring that we had them structured on a training regimen that is tied to what we're asking them to do. And we want to make sure that if someone is arrested, they're placed in custody, that they're treated appropriately, and that we've done our best to ensure that that's going to be the case.
Okay, Judy or Jim, I'd like to ask you, what benefits do you see? What do you hope to see coming out of this evaluation of the police department?
I think it's a good idea David said, to look at the policies and stuff. And so that might help us guide us as to what kind of chief and what we need, and if we need more officers. So I think it's a good timing for the survey, actually.
Well, when the idea first came up, and I don't even know how it got generated, maybe even the idea of evaluating the police department came from the Public Safety Commission. I don't know. Did it?
No.
Okay. But when the idea came out to have the evaluation, what were you hoping or thinking, wow, I think we need this because, and I'd like you to get, I would like you to get specific. We are in Haines, Alaska. We mm-hmm. are serving a specific community that you've lived in all your life. What kinds of problems do you see that we have that an evaluation of the police department might, use this little three-letter word, fix, and so that we can move on to a better place?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We've had issues with dispatch, turnover and things like that. They've had issues and police officers, and then you have, a lot of the rumors.
Turnovers.
And see, what systems can be put in place to stop some of that and scheduling. I mean, I think people that have done these surveys could say, offer other suggestions to, lower burnout or things like that. So that's what I was hoping
about. So those are kind of
in,
internal issues that mm-hmm. within the department itself and how the department works. What about relationship, community to police department?
Well, I think that's all part of it.
Will that be part of it as you imagine the evaluation? Will that include talking about the community and how it interfaces with the department?
Well, I think that we have in borough code, if you look at the responsibilities of the Public Safety Commission, mm-hmm. One of the main ones is to provide positive relations with the community.
Right.
I think we have within borough code, if it's utilized, a structure that can deal with a lot of problems associated with the police department. For example, when someone comes, they have a problem with the chief or anything, it might be good to have this problem brought to the Public Safety Commission. And we do have a public hearing section when people can stand mm-hmm. up and vent. Ray Miniker was great years ago, all his years in the assembly. I said, Ray, why is your skin's? Well, how do you do this? He said, well, two things. My skin is real thick now. Mm-hmm. And number two, you have to let people vent. And I think if we can, one of the goals of a survey is to find a way to bring the public in a positive way, to where they can vent their frustrations with any situation that might either occur with the police department or the borough or even the Public Safety Commission. I think we might diffuse a lot of this. So when we're talking about a survey, like it's going to be done by, is being done by this gentleman, I think it's important to let him know what the goals of the survey, what are ahead of time. What are we trying to get out of this survey? Rather than have him take a look at the overall department, because we've only spent, what, David, $20,000? Which is that what we've spent on this contract?
It's $22,000.
Okay, that's not a whole lot of money for a survey with a consulting firm. We have to be very specific with this gentleman exactly what we want to get
out
of this.
Okay, so that leads me to ask you, I think that audit is the word that David's used rather mm-hmm. than survey, because we're not just asking people questions. I mean, he's digging in with his own professional knowledge of how things ought to be working mm-hmm. and evaluating how we do things, I think. But So did the Public Safety Commission meet with Gregory Russell, the consultant?
I did not. I left my number multiple places, the borough, the library, and I was never contacted. My wife did give them an erroneous number.
Well, and, that's not very good.
Well, it's one digit off.
Oh, so, it was an error.
But after that was corrected. And okay. I just don't think that he had enough time. I think he was meeting with a lot of people, and right. It just didn't happen for
but it could happen.
It could happen. In fact, I would prefer he meet with the entire commission. That's okay. What I would prefer.
Okay. David, yes. Do you think that could be arranged?
Well, I'd have to check on his schedule, because mm-hmm. I know he's done mm-hmm. More than 30 interviews with people in the community. Okay. So we can see what's possible.
So, David, I don't want to spend too much more time on this yeah. but I am curious, how was it determined who Mr. Russell would be talking with?
Good question. And it's one of the things that when I first started talking with Mr. Russell, we had a conversation about, what is public safety? And public safety is the responsibility of more than just the police. It's the responsibility of the administration and the assembly and the Public Safety Commission. But most importantly, it's the responsibility of the community. So as we looked at who we want interviewed, we included members of the community, members of the Public Safety Commission, assembly members, crime victims, perpetrators of crimes,
really?
Business owners, media representatives. So as broad a spectrum as of the community to get as full an understanding and as full a picture as we could of perceptions of the police department. And then we compare those perceptions with policy and procedure, adherence to policy and procedure, and to what extent does that policy and procedure mirror what's required from the state or federal government in what we should expect from our police department.
Cool. Now, let's talk about reality. It's nice to talk about what you ought to be doing, but if you don't have enough money to make it happen, then you probably can't do it, maybe. I've never known of a volunteer police chief, but maybe it's possible. I know that, and this will come out huge and already has this morning in the news when it was reported that the loss of the funding from the state and community jails program sucked, what, $300-some thousand out of our budget?
$272,000 from okay. the town site service area.
Okay, so how did you deal with that?
Well,
loss of $272,000.
Yeah, it's a big amount of money to be asked to do without, and it represents uh-huh. a significant portion of the police budget. So we had to take a look at what's the service we're providing, and it's no different than when we took a look at all of the departments. What are we mandated to do? What do we need to do in order to provide effective service for the community? What would we like to do? And those are the three areas that we looked at, and I sat down with the police chief, and part of the discussion was, well, we've functioned with 3 and 4 police officers. We functioned with...
Does that include the chief?
That includes the chief, okay. And we functioned, you know, to that level for a while. We functioned with fewer than 5 dispatchers. There are duties the police can do that we now have contracted out. So what can we do
You're
to address...
You're speaking specifically about catching dogs, right?
Right. So what we looked at was, can we freeze the 5th officer for a short time? And in our conversation, it was yes. Can we...
So you mean you didn't budget for it? You just left a 5th officer
correct.
Out of the budget?
Correct. We okay. left that out of the budget. And can we... You know, so it still remains in structure, but it's not budgeted.
Okay.
Can we reduce hours for dispatchers and still meet our requirement? Yes, we can. Are there duties the police can do, as in catching the dogs, that we currently have contracted out? Yes, we can. This provides us flexibility. Now, the legislature is still looking at the funding for that. And if the funding goes up, then we can adjust. So it's not final, but we had to work with the information we had available at the time. And that information was, you're getting your budget cut 72%. Mm-hmm. So figure it out from there.
Okay. This leads me kind of naturally to the question of jurisdiction. I wasn't going to really go here first, so I was going to go in there later. But, you know, the fact that we have in Haynesboro a town site service area and the police service area is the core town site, which has these long stretch out to the airport and a long stretch out to the LUTAC dock. Could any of our pressures for funding be released by either reducing the size of the police service area or increasing it so that more revenue might be collected because it included more taxable properties, I suppose you could say. And then if it were smaller, and I know that I'm just going to say it, if it's smaller, you wouldn't have to drive out to the Lutac Dock and you wouldn't have to drive out to the ferry terminal or out to the airport, that sort of thing. Because a lot of the police spend a lot of time outside of the downtown core. You want to speak to this, Jim? Because, in fact, I wanted to point out, you live at 27 Mile.
That's
You're not even in the police service area.
And
you're the president.
Yeah.
Talk
and the
about
public,
that.
The Public Safety Commission dove into this in great detail.
Okay.
Ask a lot of questions. Of when Josh Bentz was taken out of here, we were without a state trooper. And for a period, we didn't have a wildlife trooper as well. Okay, so here's the breakdown. The Haines Police have jurisdiction within the town site service area unless they are directly directed by a state trooper to respond into the outer borough, which they do on occasions. In fact, when we were without a trooper, it's the nature of a fireman and a police officer that if they get a call 911, somebody's in trouble.
Yeah, they're not going to stay home.
They're going. They don't think about geographic boundaries. Okay, so a couple things. We ask a lot of questions. Are our police officers covered under liability if they're directed by the Alaska State Troopers to respond into the outer borough? They are if they're directed by an Alaska State Trooper. Okay, this wasn't the case when Josh Bentz was absent, because if somebody called in from the outer borough with a 911 call, and incidentally, this includes the two schools, if there's an intruder into the schools, you had to call either Ketchikan or Juneau Dispatch. Okay, Juneau Dispatch would then get a hold of their commanding officer if they could get a hold of him or her. He would then decide if this was an emergency, and then he would call the Haines Police Dispatch and say it's okay to send an officer. Okay, this could take 20 to 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, the Haines Police are already responding out there, and the big question is, are they covered by liability insurance? And we have never received a satisfactory answer to that. We have asked for copies of mutual aid agreements between the state troopers and the Haynesboro Police Department, and to this day we have not received any written verification that there are any mutual aid agreements. And this is a huge problem. The Haynesboro needs to make sure that these mutual aid agreements are in place, or it puts our officers at risk, because if they respond to the outer borough in an emergency and they, like David said, arrest somebody, they aren't covered by liability insurance.
Okay, so this is interesting to me, and I'd like to ask you to respond to this, David. Does it seem just kind of intuitively that, and you're an administrator, so administratively, if we organize differently and maybe worked with the state to redefine a relationship, that we might be able to achieve for the community of Haines, taxpayers, some relief or assistance? I mean, sometimes it's the way things are structured that make things cost more. So is there a possibility that, or had it ever occurred to you to...
You know, it's not something I've looked into, but again, we can't just look at this from the Haynesboro perspective, because there are staffing and manning issues associated with the Alaska State Troopers.
And the state's chopping things all
the
time.
So if any conversation would have to take place with that as the context, what are the resources that they have available that they could put to the problem? Where else would they consider putting resources? What are the resources that we have available? So it's certainly something we can look at, but I don't think there's an easy solution to it, particularly in a time when the state is facing a pretty severe budget crisis.
Right. Well, I know that the reason that the town site service area, which is the police service area, has these tentacles out is to take care of, to review our infrastructure, to preserve or just monitor what's going on with the Lutac Dock and at the airport, because those are properties that we own and are responsible for to a certain extent. So we do need to have that coverage, but it is kind of costly in a way especially when you have a diminished number of people, how much area can they, satisfactorily be monitoring all the time? And I think, Judy, you had talked about that earlier, that it takes, when somebody's out at LUTAC, it takes them 10 minutes to respond to something that's happening in town.
Yeah, and that happened to me one time. I mean, just because it's late at night, so I just, if you don't have a chief or, I mean, a police officer on duty, then it's going to take a while.
Right.
Respond.
Okay, we have a few minutes. I want to wrap up. One of the things in code is that the Public Safety Commission reviews police reports to detect trends evident in Haines as portrayed through police statistics and advise the Borough Assembly on programs addressing these database needs. So do you guys, does the Police Commission do that?
Chief Musser has done an excellent job of every meeting giving us statistics and an update on the police department. He's done a wonderful job doing that.
All right.
Yeah.
So do you think that the Public Safety Commission performs a valuable service?
I think it provides a link between the police department and the public that really does need to be there. Most of what I hear from residents in Haines is positive about the police department. We have a tendency to have a knee-jerk reaction when somebody stands up before the assembly and starts screaming and yelling about any given issue. Rumors start to fly, which are very destructive to the positive force of the police department. You know, we are a community that is very subject to rumor. Mm-hmm. And rumors get blown out of proportion, and I see the Public Safety Commission as, I wish it was utilized more in these.
Well, some people have said that the this community won't let the police department do its job. We're so close-knit and so tight and so protective that we don't allow our police to do their job, and that's where a lot of frustration ends up, because why isn't so-and-so being arrested? Everybody knows that they did it, and why isn't this happening? Everybody knows this, that.
I know.
But yet the police department can't get the cooperation of the community. You're shaking your head. Is that true?
Yeah.
David, have you heard from your officers that we're a difficult town to police?
Yeah, I think any community where you have people that are tight-knit, you have a lot of relationships that are long-standing relationships. So people are torn between their family or their friend and the community as a whole. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard choice for people to make. But I think, you know, we have to make sure that if we're going to be a community of laws, that we're willing to do what's necessary to support the police department and any of the other departments within the community that are here to support the community.
I can't think of a better way to close out the show. Thank you very much, David.
You bet.
Thank you,
thanks
Jim,
for having
and
us.
Thank
thanks,
you, Judy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
From the Meditations of John Muir, Nature's Temple. Compiled and edited by Chris Hyland and published by Wilderness Press, 2001. First published in 1938 as John of the Mountains, the unpublished journals of John Muir. So here we are with Traveling the Milky Way. We all travel the Milky Way together, trees and people, but it never occurred to me until this storm day while swinging in the wind that trees are travelers in the ordinary sense. They make many journeys, not extensive ones, it is true, but our own little journeys away and back again are only little more than tree wavings, many of them not so much. When the storm began to abate, I dismounted and sauntered down through the calming woods. The storm tones died away, and turning towards the east, I beheld the countless hosts of the forest, hushed and tranquil, towering above one another on the slopes of the hills like a devout audience. The setting sun filled them with amber light and seemed to say, while they listened, "My peace I give unto you." And thanks for joining us today and exploring a bit more deeply some aspects of community life here in Haines. Thanks to Tom Morfitt, Tom Haywood, Jim Stanford, Judy Erickson, and David Sosa. This program was produced in the studios of KHNS under the guidance of Margaret Friedenauer, the news director, and her staff, Emily Files. I'm Deborah Schnabel, the volunteer writer and host. Thanks for joining us today. You want to hear it again? KHNS.org.